Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, that's what we should be thinking about, according to St. Paul. All the good and godly goings on. He wants us to dwell in the light and talk about these things, too. That is certainly what we attempt to do on Call Me Catholic every week. I am Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation intended to affirm and explore and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times so we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. We can call Jimmy G, my engineer and chief fact checker, the birthday boy this week. Happy birthday to my highly skilled engineer.
Well, thank you very much. And I agree with everything you just said.
Well, you better hear it every week.
That whole open, I agree with everything.
You could repeat it in your sleep, I'm sure.
I probably could, yes.
But did you have a good birthday?
I did.
Yeah.
Just the fact that I'm still here, you know, is positive.
You don't look a day older.
I felt a day older.
Well, last year was kind of a big one. I remember we kind of made a big deal about it. It was one of those decades.
It had a zero on the end.
Yes. Hey, if you'd like to see what Jimmy G looks like from the back on his Facebook page, on our Facebook page, this is how you can watch a live stream of the show. So if you are near a computer, what you do is you go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/callmecatholic. And Marvelous Matt, our studio assistant and all-around talent in the other room, he puts up a link to a live stream of the show. You click that link, it'll take you to a new page, and you can watch us here in the studio. And Jimmy G will occasionally turn around and say, hi.
I don't think the cameras can pick me up. Which,
don't they pick up the back
shame,
of you a little
isn't
bit?
It?
We got to change that, Jimmy G. You're the co-star here.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Hey, Jimmy G and I, as we are every week, are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the gorgeous, shimmering Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County, California. This is the Diocese of Orange. We have almost 60 parishes here, one of the fastest growing dioceses in the United States. We are under the leadership of our good shepherd, Bishop Kevin Vann. So we are a large diocese. In fact, I think we're the second largest west of the Mississippi, and we're growing. And as a result of that, we should be all doing this as Catholics, whether we need it or not. We pray for vocations here in the Diocese of Orange, because Catholics make up about one-third of the population of Orange County. I mean, that's
amazing.
Pretty amazing. So we have 3.2 million people in Orange County and 1.3 million Catholics in this nearly 800 square miles of beautiful West Coast real estate.
I was wondering how many square miles. You just answered that question.
I think it's 790, wow. Actually, to be exact. We're going to round it up. I'm going to talk like a realtor.
Right.
We're going to round it up. A lot of Catholics, a lot of prospective Catholics to minister to. And fortunately, in addition to our good diocesan priests, we have lots of religious orders that augment the church's staff, so to speak, and minister to all of the Catholics and the prospective Catholics. We have somewhere around 300, a little over 300 sisters from different religious orders who live in and serve the people of Orange County through hospitals and schools and shelters and retreat houses. They're doing great, great work. And then we have priests from all kinds of different religious orders that help out with the diocesan work. You know, it's fun when you go to your parish for a Sunday Mass or even a daily Mass and you see a priest in a different habit than the diocesan. Maybe they're wearing brown or they're wearing black or they're wearing white. It's kind of fun. They come from religious orders. Now, yeah, the brown ones would usually be the Franciscans. Then you have the black who are Dominican and I think Benedictine monks. And then the Jesuits wear whatever they want. They don't worry about that. And the Norbertines wear white. Now, we are blessed here in this diocese because there is a monastery in the Silverado Canyon that houses the good Norbertine fathers. And they also have a school there, a boys' prep school right on their campus. And they're building a new monastery not too far away, beautiful new monastery. But they wear long white habits, so they really stand out.
Right, yep.
Beautiful. And they always wear their habits. They are very proud of their habits, long, flowing white habits. They're kind of like a weather front that just moves in. And they serve a lot of our parishes. They actually manage a couple of the parishes here. And so we love our Norbertine priests. And so today, we are honoring and celebrating and learning a little bit more about some of the different religious orders that give our church its richly diverse cast of highly holy men and women who dedicate their lives to carry out the mission of Jesus Christ, serve the world, propagate the faith, the noble brothers and sisters living in religious orders. And, you know, these men and women who answer the call to religious vocations, they come from families. They have moms and dads and siblings, childhood friends, maybe a few ex-boyfriends and girlfriends. They are real ordinary people who have chosen an extraordinary profession. Now, our guests today appreciate that more than you can ever imagine. Denise and Tony O'Borney have been married for 29 years. They have 9 children. Now, listen, 3 of their daughters chose the same vocation. They chose to become nuns, cloistered nuns, who live a life exclusively devoted to prayer and worship. And this particular order, and they all 3 entered the same order, is in a secluded convent nestled into the beautiful high desert of Tehachapi here in California. They are the Norbertine canonesses. Yes, they are related to the Norbertine priests. They are the Norbertine canonesses of the Bethlehem Priory of St. Joseph. And you're going to hear a remarkable and moving testimony from Denise and Tony O'Borney in just a minute about their 3 daughters entering that order. And then in our Chatting with Catholics, I take my microphone to a social gathering of Catholic women here in the Diocese of Orange, and I ask them if they have a personal relationship with anyone who's entered a religious order, you know, a friend or a family member. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of an informal poll.
It is.
But first up, it's our Call Me Catholic Countdown, which this week, because we are celebrating the hundreds of religious orders in our Catholic Church, is the top 5 things that might surprise the average Catholic about life in a religious order or about being called to serve as a priest or a sister in our Catholic faith.
Was this something you saw on a game show or something?
We need a good Catholic game show.
Yeah, you
did. Actually, we were going to do a game show.
That's right.
We never quite got that off the ground.
No.
Part of our show. We got to resurrect that.
Yes.
No, but this is just the Peggy Normandin Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Okay.
Okay, the top 5 things the average Catholic doesn't know about religious order. Life in a religious order.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
There you go. This is the jazzy one. I thought we would have gone with a more angelic theme song for this one.
Well, it sounds really game show-ish.
Okay. All right. We're going to do it the game show way then, Jimmy G. Okay. Number 5 is that people in religious orders are happy. I think sometimes they are painted as dour, sad, you know, sacrificing, suffering souls. But, you know, they're all very happy. They are at peace. They are at peace with themselves. They are at peace with their life. Their life is very ordered, and they have great accountability, and they are happy. So I've heard many priests give homilies on Vocation Sunday about the fact that priests are happy. I mean, how many unhappy priests have you met? Now, this is provided that they have discerned correctly, that they're in their vocation correctly. I mean, there might be a few, you might have grown up with a few cranky nuns or cranky priests, and maybe they just hadn't chosen the right vocation. But by and large, they're happy. Okay, number 4, a religious life is not a passive life. These are very busy people. I mean, have you ever tried to call up and invite a priest or a nun to dinner? We have a very good friend, Father Greg, and when you know, he'll say, "Hey, let's have dinner." Okay, great. Get your calendar out, Greg. When's the first time you could come over? 6 months. I got an opening in 6 months. I mean, they're very, very busy, and their life is very, very full and rich. So, religious life is not a passive, solitary, sedate life.
That's true. That's
okay.
True.
Number 3, they are probably more inclined to enjoy healthy hobbies than we lay people are. Priests and nuns that I know, they have the coolest hobbies and they pursue them because they're not distracted by things that are vapid. You know, they have good, rich hobbies. Now, I'm going to, at this point, introduce you to a sister that I met through Facebook. She's one of our Facebook fans, and her name is Sister Christina. She belongs to the Franciscan Sisters of Dillingen, and her order is in North Dakota. There's 25 members there, and they serve in they do different wonderful ministries for the community. They serve the poor, and they serve the retirement homes and things like that. Mm. And Sister has a very neat blog, and it's called OurFranciscanFiat.wordpress.com. And in it, she talks about her cooking. She loves liturgical music and all of her hobbies, playing cards and things like that. In the life, you know, she has a lot of interesting interests, and she shares it in this OurFranciscanFiat.wordpress.com. Mm. So there you go, Sister Christina. I gave the Franciscan Sisters of Dillingen a shout out. Thanks for being our friend on Facebook. Okay. Number 2 thing you might not know about religious life is that it's not unusual to consider a religious vocation. I mean, if every good, faithful person should at some point in their life say, "God, are you calling me to a life exclusively in service of your faith?" Mm. There are many famous people that you might be surprised considered religious life. Eva Mendez says she once considered being a nun. Wow. Angelica Houston, famous actress, son of a daughter of John Houston. She used to put on her mother's tutus and relive her first Holy Communion, pretending she was a nun making her vows. She admitted to that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Dan Aykroyd. Dan Aykroyd went to a Catholic school most of his life, and he said he considered being a priest for 9 seconds.
Ah.
So there you go. He
said,
he gave it 9 seconds. Now, another odd one, Tom Cruise.
That one I heard about.
Yeah, he went to St. Francis Seminary School in Ohio. Hmm. They must have had some odd formation for him at that time because he went real sideways from there. He's in the High Holy Scientology.
Yes, yes.
Now. So, sorry, Tom, you made a wrong move there. Okay, and Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway frequently talks about how she wanted to become a nun when she was a little girl. Okay, so that's something else you might not have known about religious orders. We should all consider it. And number one, they live longer. People in religious orders live longer. Now, taking up holy orders may not guarantee life after death, but it does ensure a longer one on earth. Research definitely shows that ministers, priests, vicars, nuns, monks live much longer and healthier than their flocks. So there you have it. Lots of benefits to joining a religious order. Join one today. Actually, it takes a long time to join a religious order and to discern so. So we should just keep praying every day for our religious priests and sisters, past, present, and future. Coming up next, we're going to talk with the parents of three consecrated women, three daughters who joined the Cloistered Order of the Norbertine Canonesses in Tehachapi, California. You definitely want to hear this story and learn more about this profoundly holy order of women, growing order of religious. So check out our Facebook page, too, facebook.com, Call Me Catholic, and join our family. But mostly we want you to stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am Peggy Normandin, and today on the show, we are praising all the men and women in our good faith who have consecrated their lives, dedicated their lives to exclusive service of the church that Jesus Christ himself founded. Now, serving the church as a religious takes a lot of different forms. There are those that go out into the world. They engage in a hands-on sort of way with the people and the things and the issues that are demanding, the world demands some attention from. And then there are those religious who devote their holy lives to the monastic rhythms of prayer and contemplation. In fact, separating themselves from the outside world in pursuit of the most perfect form of worship. Such an order of women reside in a quiet valley in the Tehachapi Mountains of Southern California. They are the Norbertine Canonesses of the Bethlehem Priory of St. Joseph, a community of cloistered religious nuns that is a fairly young community established in 1997 and surprisingly thriving with new postulants. Three of the young women who are living in this cloistered community as Norbertine sisters are daughters of our guests today, Denise and Tony O'Borney. Denise and Tony have been married for 29 years. They have 9 children, ranging in age from 28 to 8. They have 3 grandchildren and 3 daughters who are consecrated religious nuns, Sister Mary Agnes, Sister Mary Emmanuel, and Sister Mary Gabriel. Let's hear their story. Denise and Tony, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Tony.
Hello. Thank you, Peggy.
I feel like a principal. You know, Tony, speak up.
Yep. We don't do this every day.
No, I know. Well, we don't meet people every day that have 3 daughters that have chosen to enter the same order of cloistered nuns. I mean, I mentioned in my intro that at the end of the show, I did this kind of small poll out in a Catholic audience of women asking them, do you know people that have entered religious orders? And I was surprised by how many people said no. I mean, there used to be a time when every family kind of did that. But you are certainly a return to that beautiful tradition of being blessed with a family member that enters the religious orders. So I kind of want to go back to the beginning. So you and Tony were married 29 years ago. Denise, were you very active Catholics at that time?
No. Not at all. I'm a convert, so I joined the Catholic Church just to make sure that my husband wouldn't propose to me. So,
did you convert before you got married then?
Right.
So
yes,
it was one of those things that you kind of did almost as routine,
right?
Because that way Everybody was happy.
I became Catholic for the wrong reason, but stayed for the right. Right.
Okay.
I think it was a good reason. It worked. It's worked out for 29 years.
Tony's got a big smile on his face.
With my family, cradle Catholic from Kansas, we both were. No options.
No options, yes.
No options.
So you got married in the church, and you married a nice Catholic girl, a recent Catholic girl. Okay, so you have 9 children. At what point did you realize your oldest daughter is married, but then the next daughter, Sister Mary
Agnes
mm-hmm. tells you she thinks she has a vocation? At what point were you aware of that, and what happened from that point forward in your lives and in her life?
Well, it started off when she was young. At one point, I remember we were walking in a grocery store, and I think she was probably about 4 or 5, and said, "I want to be a nun." And I went, "Oh, okay. You want Honey Nut Cheerios or Fruit Loops?"
Yeah.
And so we just went
kind of
on.
Like, "I want to be a princess."
Right, right. And those things would come up, just periodically throughout her life. Like, I would tell her, "You need to learn how to iron shirts, you know, so you'll be able to do that for your husband when you get married." And she mm-hmm. says, "But if I get married."
Wow.
So it was always in the back of her mind, but not very strong.
So we're assuming that God put that in there, but was there anything in her life up to that point that would have introduced her to a religious life in this really positive way?
When we lived in Connecticut for 5 years, she and her older sister volunteered at a convent up there taking care of the sisters in the infirmary,
oh, okay.
So the elderly sisters.
So that
made an impression. And then when we moved back to California, we're good friends with the Norbertine priests. And so when she did feel a calling, then the Norbertine priests were the first one we called and said, "Now what do we do?"
Well, and what age was she at that point?
She was 19.
19. So it is unusual for a beautiful 19-year-old girl to... It is not unusual maybe for her to consider becoming a nun, but to enter an order that is cloistered, that is removing her. 19 is like the apex of when you want to be part of the world. But she wanted to remove herself from the world.
It didn't start off that way. She had a boyfriend, and they were very close to becoming engaged and talking about future plans. And she was in college at the time, and something wasn't right with the the relationship was good, but something just didn't feel right. So at Christmas break, she broke up with him and said, "The only reason I can think of to give him was to say, I need to check out religious orders because he's a good Catholic guy." He
so
wouldn't argue.
It was an excuse at that point.
It was an excuse
like,
at that point.
Wow, of all the breakup lines, that one's pretty hard to argue.
How can a good Catholic guy argue with that, right? So we called up our good friend, Father Augustine, and said, "Now, you know, where's an order for her to go look at so she's not lying to this boy, right?" And he said, "Well, you know, the best one is the Norbertine sisters in Tehachapi." I had no idea how to get there or anything. And she did go do a come and see over her Christmas break for a few days. And the first, I think she was there 5 days, the first 4 days, she hated it.
Uh-huh.
Hated it. She didn't have anything to do. It was too quiet. And then the last day was a Sunday. She went to Mass and she just kind of gave her total fiat and said, "God, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. This is crazy, but I'll do whatever you want me to do."
Wow.
And she felt total peace. And at that moment, she knew this is where she needed to be.
So she came home from that convinced that that was the right order for her. And she was 19.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tony, at what age did she then enter into the convent as a postulant? Was it shortly thereafter?
Yeah, it was shortly thereafter. She had to finish school.
Okay.
She had to finish her semester.
Was that a prerequisite of the sisters?
No, not necessarily.
She
had made a commitment that she was going to do 2 years at Wyoming Catholic College. And she did 2 years, and then she entered, I think, that summer when she got back, right?
Well, I was just going to say, Wyoming Catholic College, that's interesting you should mention that, because we interviewed the president of Thomas Aquinas College, and I asked him, what college is most like your college? And he said, Wyoming Catholic College. I'd never heard of it, but it sounds like it's a fantastic college.
It really is.
So that really contributed to some of her early formation, too.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Okay.
For sure.
So at that point in time, you weren't even living in... Were you living in California?
Yes.
Okay, but she'd gone away to college then, to
right.
Wyoming Catholic
right.
College. So she went away. How did that feel for your second oldest daughter to go away into a cloistered convent?
I think her going away to college in Wyoming was a good start for that separation, because we couldn't see her every week, but we could call her, we could talk to her, she could come home for visits and things like that. So when she said she was going to join a cloister, it was still very, very scary because all I knew about cloistered was, you know, what Hollywood tells
bars.
You.
Where there's no bars.
There's bars. Then. You're never going to see her again, never going to touch her again, and all these things is very dramatic. And it wasn't until she entered that we realized it really isn't as bad as we thought it was going to be.
It's kind of like her experience at Mass that final day. It suddenly, once you give it over to God, it feels very natural. We are talking today, we have the privilege of talking today with Denise and Tony O'Borney, who are the parents of 9 children, but 3 of those daughters entered the same cloistered convent, the Dorbertin Canonesses Convent up in Tehachapi, California. It's kind of a remarkable story. If you would like to join our conversation, maybe you have a comment or a question, you have a child that's discerning, maybe you are discerning yourself, or you'd like to ask her some questions about what it's like to be a parent of a daughter that lives in a cloister, give us a call. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. I know Denise and Tony would love to field your questions and to hear your comments. Maybe you have similar experiences. So when she went away, right after, you know, shortly after having visited them, was that the last time that she was in your home?
No, she finished up that second school year at Wyoming Catholic College, and then she came home, and we were blessed to be able to have her for the entire summer.
Before she went up.
Before she went away. So we really made the best use of that summer ever.
Yeah.
And we spent all of our time together as a family and did all of those things that we could possibly do.
And what was her disposition like? Was there a sense of excitement? Was there a sense of a little trepidation? Was she already kind of living this very secretly spiritual life?
She was very spiritual in that she went to Mass every morning, and she went to confessions regularly, sought a spiritual advisor to help her through these kinds of things, and still, you know, realistically had doubts about, I really have a great Catholic guy I could marry,
mm-hmm.
But my heart is going in this other direction, mm-hmm. and we talked endlessly up into wee hours of the morning about this decision that she's
making. I bet
making.
You treasure those months before she moved up there.
More than anything.
She was probably so open and her soul was so visible to you. That's beautiful.
Yes.
And how did the siblings react to this first sister going into the convent?
Surprised.
Were they?
What? What is she going to do? Where is she going to go? What? Yeah, so they were very surprised, and it was hard for them to think of her. I think it was just all for all of us. It was the idea of the unknown. We have no idea where this is. What is she going to do? Are we ever going to be able to talk to her again? Kind of thing. And the girls, the other girls, and the brothers too.
Yeah.
We're just a little scared about it. But
well, it's kind of like a prophet is never accepted in their own land. Too. It's like, what? You're not holy? Are you kidding? I could see her little brothers teasing her about that.
Yeah.
So she entered, and that was, but that summer was the last time she was home.
Right.
And that
right.
will be the last time she's home.
Right.
For the most part. I mean, unless there's something unusual. Then what happened to daughter number 3? At what point did she decide that this was her life too? This could be her life. Was there a point where you thought maybe it's just because she wants to go be with her sister?
She had always wanted to get married and teach and have lots of kids and things like that. And then when Sister Mary Agnes entered, it was the day that she had entered and we came home. It was
did the whole family go up, by the way?
No.
You? Oh, no. Just mom and dad.
No, because we had little babies at the time, and that would be too distracting. And I knew I was going to cry a lot, so we didn't need
yeah.
But the day we came home, she said, I think I could be open to this vocation.
Oh.
Let's just think on that for a while, because it's kind of raw right now.
Oh, yeah. Denise, I can imagine.
It's a little raw.
Yeah.
But she thought about it, and she started looking online at different orders, and she said, I'll do anything but not the cloister. I'll go active.
Oh, so that was a good way to determine that she wasn't just trying to go up and be
right.
with her sister. She
right.
was just considering religious life.
Anything
also.
But the cloister. I couldn't do the cloister.
Yeah.
So
that's
she
interesting.
Checked out.
And how many years later did she go up and test it out?
Maybe 2 years.
Wow.
So she was going to join the Dominicans in Ann Arbor, Michigan. She was already accepted and things like
those
that.
Those Norbertines so have pull, let me tell
they
you.
They do. Well, St. Dominic was a Norbertine.
Oh, he was.
Yes, he does.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's the connection.
There was that competition.
We're talking today with Denise Antonio Borney, whose 3 daughters are cloistered nuns in Tehachapi at the convent for the Norbertine canonesses of the Bethlehem Prior of St. Joseph. A beautiful, generous story of parents really supporting their daughters and their children in this kind of religious vocation that we should all be praying for. Give us a call if you'd like to join this conversation. I know you have some questions or comments for them. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. Maybe you have a daughter or son who is right now discerning a vocation. Maybe you're experiencing some of the pain and you know, some of the missing them that Denise is talking about, and you'd like to share that. Join the conversation. We'd love to have you. My name is Peggy Normandin. You're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. We'll be right back with more conversation.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, hello there. I am Peggy Normandin, and you are listening to Call Me Catholic today on a day where we are celebrating our beautiful religious orders in the Catholic Church. We all know our diocesan priests, and maybe the nuns that you grew up with, that taught you in your grammar school or high school. But there are so many interesting, beautiful religious orders out there, and they are serving the church in their many different ways through their many different charisms. We have the great privilege and fortune today of talking with Denise and Tony O'Borney, who are parents of 9 children, but 3 of them entered a cloistered convent in Tehachapi, California. It is the Norbertine canonesses of the Bethlehem Priory of St. Joseph. And I think, Tony, you would have to admit that it's kind of unusual to have 1 daughter, then 2 daughters, then 3 daughters enter such a unique calling vocation, a cloistered vocation. I mean, it must have really seemed like, wow, this can't be happening. So let's pick up the story where we left off. Your first daughter entered. She was the age of 19. Okay. Then the second daughter, who's how much younger than the first daughter?
3 years.
3 years younger, decides, well, maybe she'd like to enter a religious order. And she's thinking, but I don't want to live a cloistered life. That isn't my calling. Tony, how did she finally answer that call and decide, no, cloistered life is going to be for me, just like it was for my sister?
Yeah, she went through a similar discernment process. She was in college, went up to Canada to a small little college up there, Mother Seat of Wisdom.
Well, these girls certainly had great Catholic education.
Yeah, they definitely did. And with my wife doing the heavy lifting with the homeschooling, that was really, really worked out well to keep that focus, keep that center. But she, all throughout her college, which lasted, I think, 1 semester, she knew she needed to be somewhere. She knew she needed to be somewhere, and the opportunity came. She went through the discernment, and just like with Sister Mary Agnes, there was a knocking.
Mm-hmm.
And once she made that decision that she needed to join there, the peace came within her heart.
Wow. And then she went off. So now you say goodbye to your second daughter to enter the cloistered convent. You're a little more familiar with the routine now and the drill, but was it just as hard to leave her, Denise, at the door?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
Even their entry days were different. Even the entry days itself were different.
For you or for her?
For both of us.
Yeah.
For both of us. The first one was very ordered and kind of calm. The second one was a little more disordered. And
so are these girls all different in personalities, too?
Very much so.
Okay, so let's get to the third daughter that enters. How many years later does your next daughter announce to you, I have a vocation?
She just entered in 2016. So she, 2016. She, ever since she was 8, said, I want to be a nun. I know St. Therese.
Yeah.
Well, you had a very personal conversation.
Your family life does ring a real familiar bell with Zelie and Louis Martin.
Only that we have multiple vocations.
They had 9 children. Stuff. They had 9 children. 5 of them, it beat you by 2, but you still have young ones at home.
We see. Competition's on.
So the third one entered the convent. And so now you have 3 daughters in this cloistered convent. We have an interesting call from Rosa, who's listening to us from Ohio. Rosa, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Oh, thank you, Peggy Normandin. I listen to you as much as I can. You're wonderful. Thank you for your show.
Well, bless you.
And your lives, too. That's just amazing on the weekend. I thank you. Bless you. I wanted to ask, first of all, I wanted to say that the gift, that's beautiful that they have 3 daughters that's in the religious life, and especially in the cloister. And I was wondering if these daughters get to see each other in the cloister, in their doing chores or leisurely activities or eating or, you know, and did they know the other their other sisters are there?
That's a great, great question, Rosa.
That is a good question. Right? They do get to see each other. They get to see each other all day long during their prayer in the choir loft. It's set up so that they face each other. Some of the sisters are on one side and the other sisters are on the other side. So they know that they're praying with each other throughout the day. They do have different jobs within the cloister themselves. The oldest one works with the animals. The second one works on the newsletters and inside and things like that. And the third one helps water the garden and do things like that. But then in the evenings every day they have recreation that all of the sisters, the entire order, get to get together for about an hour and a half and spend some time together. So they are allowed to spend that fun time where they play games or whatever. And during the summer, I think a very fun little story is that they all three wrote us letters about when it was very hot up there, they were able to all go swimming together in the lake.
Oh, fun.
It was very fun.
Oh, that's a lovely picture.
It is a very fun picture. They still wear their habits. They never go without their habits. So they were in the water with their habits on and having to be careful because the habits get very heavy.
They need little water wings.
They use pool noodles and things to stay afloat. But the fun thing is that they were able to have that fun time together, and they were able to make donuts together one day during their Christmas break. So, yes, they do get to spend some time together.
That's a great question, Rosa. Thanks very much. Do you have any other comments?
Well, I just think that's fun. The bigger were their habits and when they're in the lake there, that's a lot of fun.
Well, I would have loved to have seen a picture of that, but they are cloistered, you know. We can't get behind the wall, so they have their privacy. Hey, Rosa, thanks for calling and thanks for listening. All our best to you in Ohio.
Thank you. You too. Thank you very much.
You know, I do love the human element that you just added to this. You know, yes, they wear their long white gowns and habits. Yes, they are very prayerful and they maintain, you know, this beautiful, peaceful countenance. But they do have fun and right. They do interact with each other.
Right.
What is their normal day like in the cloister?
Well, it starts off very early in the morning at midnight for matins. Most of them get up for matins. Not all of them have to.
And then, like 2 or midnight?
At midnight,
okay.
And that's their longest prayer time. So it goes for about an hour, maybe a little bit more. And then they go back to sleep, and then they wake back up for the rest of the day. It starts at 6 o'clock with Lauds and Angelus, and then just moves through. They have Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament at 7:15. They have Mass every morning at 8 o'clock. And they do have morning chores from like 10 to 11:30. Yeah. Everybody, we all have our morning chores.
Well,
and they're
yes,
no,
and
they're no different.
Yeah, they're working because they also have the things that support themselves. They make cheese. They make Christmas wreaths that they sell. In fact, I'm going to tell our listeners right now that if you'd like to know more about this fascinating, young, thriving order of religious nuns, go to norbertinesisters.org. I'm sorry, norbertinesisters.org. I think you will be fascinated by this beautiful young order of nuns that is attracting these vibrant young women into the cloister, which is just so, so interesting. So, Denise and Tony, let me ask you, what is the process by which these young women enter? Is there any kind of, if you'll pardon the modern term, vetting that goes on so that they can determine if these women are of sane mind and body and if they are free of responsibilities and sort of entanglements in the world when they enter the convent?
Of course, yes. They meet with Mother Mary Augustine and a novice mistress, Sister Mary Johannes Baptista, and they interview them and talk to them about why do you want to enter the religious life first? Mm-hmm. And is this cloister life? It's a very special, particular way to serve our Lord. Is this the right place for you? So they do all of that, and they have to enter debt-free. So all of the college bills have to be paid off before you can enter, of course, and just special questions on.
Well, then, and there is also kind of a very in-depth scrutiny that goes on at one point, psychiatric scrutiny, I believe,
yes.
For all religious.
Right.
Which, and I, fortunately, I think you said the parents don't have to go through that, right, Tony?
Thank goodness.
Be a little rough on a parents, like, I'm giving you my daughter, back off this. But they do have to go in debt-free, which is hard for some young men and women that have college loans. And I have known of parishes that kind of collectively try to come up with a fund that helps pay off some of those debts Jim, did you have a question?
Well, I was going to say they don't put the parents in those rooms and they shine the bright lights on you and it's really hot.
Where were you on the night on Sunday morning at 8 a.m.
We opted out on that one.
Got it. Yeah.
Hey, we have another caller from Texas, Christina. Christina, how are things in Texas? Are you down there in the wake of all the Irma's or you were Harvey's disasters?
Yeah. No, I'm up near Dallas and
so good. Thanks
very blessed.
Staying on high ground.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, welcome to Call Me Catholic, Christina.
Thank you. My 27-year-old daughter has joined a French order, so she met this order when she was doing a semester in Paris, France, and she had just given her yes to God because she had been telling everybody, God wants me to be a nun, but I'm not going to. And so I kept praying to God and saying, it's your problem.
Yeah.
I know you're calling her. But she finally had said yes, and she was going to her semester. And so while she was there, she kept visiting. And every sister she saw, she would speak to. And she did meet a sister there at Mass one day. And the sister said, well, why don't you come and spend the weekend? And she said that was it. She knew that was the one for her.
The invitation, very important.
It was really amazing. And then she, with great trepidation, she came back. You know, we told her she had to finish college, and she had a couple more years. And they had a convent up in New Jersey, so that was only 4 hours from her university. So she went up there going, I hope I still feel the same way when I visit this convent. And she did. She said, oh, when I go there, I feel like I'm coming home.
Oh, is that beautiful? Well, Christina, do you miss her? I mean, do you have to deal with, not having her around?
Goodness.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, the whole first year she was gone because as soon as she graduated from college, you know, like 4 weeks later, she was on the plane to France. And, I think I cried buckets and buckets the first year. But I knew that she is super happy. We were able to visit her a few months later, and I'd never seen her happier in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been 5 years, and she's still super happy. I think what was really great was when we went to go visit, we found out there were several other Americans in the order. And I said, oh, give me your parents' names and phone numbers and email address, and I'll get in touch.
What a brilliant idea.
One of the moms started up a group online, and it was our support network for the parents of, you know, all the American sisters over there.
Oh, that's such a great, great concept, Christina. Hey, so does she speak French? Is this a French-speaking order?
Yes. Yes, it is. And they're having lots and lots of young ladies from all over the world joining, which amazes me, because it's only about less than 40 years old. But they're very traditional, wear full habits. They have another house now for all the American or English-speaking people in Illinois. So they go there for 3 years, and then while they're doing the novitiate, they're also learning French.
Oh, so they're learning French when they enter. That's very interesting. Wow, see, there are so many different religious orders. They are all called to serve in different ways, but what's really wonderful is to see parents being so joyfully generous in giving their daughters and sons over to these religious orders, and you sound like one of those joyful parents. I love that you've created a network with other parents. I want to ask Denise, do they have anything like that with the Norbertine sisters? A consortium of parents, you know, communicating
sure.
with each other?
Yeah, it's a very informal, but we get to see each other and talk to each other and cry on each other's shoulders every once in a while.
Hey, Christina, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
And God bless your darling daughter.
Thank you.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye.
And Christina's story is so much like ours. The sisters join, and you're a little apprehensive. And then when you go visit now, which we will be visiting tomorrow, there's joy. You know, Christina, you said you will not find a happier place. I respectfully submit that you will not find a happier place on this world than if you go visit a convent of sisters.
Well, I said that on my Call Me Catholic Countdown. It was one of the top first ones. That's the biggest misconception, is that they are happy. They are not somber, dour people.
Yes.
Yeah, they're very, very joyful. What do you think is that, other than that misconception, what are some of the other misconceptions that you think people might have, particularly about cloistered life?
Well, just the being serious thing, and then not being able to ever see them again or not being able to touch them again. That was a misconception I think we had ourselves. But we can. There is a grill that we visit through, but we can touch each other and...
Well, and I love the fact that you mentioned, I don't think you mentioned it on the air, but that your oldest daughter, the oldest one that entered, loves animals. And here she's able to work with the animals. I mean, right. up there at the Norbertine right. Convent, they have goats, they have dogs. I know the dogs
cows.
Are, they sleep during the day, but they're awake at night protecting the livestock.
Right. They're actually breeding dogs now as a way to make money.
Oh, so that's interesting.
They have McNab puppies right now, and they have Labrador puppies right now that she is in charge of training.
See,
so that she
wonderful?
Can, yeah, so that they can sell those things too. So
yeah.
they're making money on their own. And
I mean, they do support themselves, but mm-hmm. each of these women bring a different skill, and it seems to be just the perfect puzzle. It all fits
right.
together.
Each of our daughters have their own special gifts, and they're being able to use those in the cloister that we didn't think they would be able to do.
Richly, richly. Hey, we have another caller from Houston. Hey, Donna from Houston, how are you doing in the wake of Harvey?
I was very blessed. I'm very fortunate, and we're just trying to help the other folks that are not so fortunate recover.
Well, we have been very impressed by the people of Texas. You have shown your incredible zealous spirit, and the world loves you and salutes you. Did you have a question for our guest today, Donna?
I'm not sure if it's a question, and I think Tony kind of answered it. It's Tony, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I think he kind of answered it. I'm a mom of two kids. One is the daughter. My daughter has been discerning since she was in high school. And I thought for a while she decided her vocation was motherhood, children. She's finishing up college. But she makes a lot of friends who are in a lot of different orders.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very pleased that's been a part of her life. It's been a good, strong part of her life.
Yeah.
I did not have as much opportunity for that when I was young as she's been given, and I just think it's marvelous. I guess I've known it. I'm not sure. She's not sure what she's going to do. She's just open to God's call, which is what I want her to be. I'm just not sure. Once that moment comes, how do I walk through the rest of
that's a good, honest question,
my time?
Donna. Yeah, it's a good, honest question. Maybe Denise can help you with that.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Hi, Donna. When I was helping my daughters discern whether this was the right thing for them, one of the things that we came to the conclusion, like God guided us to this point, was that we want to give God our everything. And so if we just say yes, he's going to take care of us. If they enter, if your daughter does enter, you give it a year. Give God your year. Just, you know, put that into your heart that I'm going to stay for a year, give it my all. And if God doesn't want you there, he will show you where else to go. But you've given God a full year. It's the most beautiful thing you can do. And if he says, this is where I want you, he's going to give all of you the peace and joy and comfort that you need in order to make it through to the next step. Once you enter, that's another misconception I think that people have, is that once you walk through that door, you're there for life. That's not the case at all. Once you enter...
No, it's not. I've come to understand that also.
Right, right. You have a very long time. You have up to 9 years. You can't be engaged to a human man for 9 years before getting married. That would be ridiculous.
I think it's been done. I think it's been done out there, Denise.
Not
but
done prudently.
You know, also, Donna, I would say that sometimes our biggest worries and anxieties come from things we are anticipating. And
right.
in the end, it may feel very natural when it actually happens. I mean, you may actually feel more peace than you anticipate right now because the decision
I'm
has not
really
been made.
I'm really working hard at handing that back over. Instead
right.
of holding on to it.
Yeah. Well, God bless you. And I think prayer earnestly offered to God in this particular case will be answered fruitfully. And thank you for your generosity in raising a daughter that's discerning a vocation and supporting her through
thank
it.
You.
And I have a feeling you're going to be just fine, Donna. You're going to feel some of the hurt and the missing her that our parents here have expressed.
It's very bittersweet. It really is very bittersweet, but the sweet always overpowers the bitter. Yeah. It really does, if you're doing God's will.
I know that without question, there was a reason I turned the radio on at that moment in time. This was an episode I was meant to hear.
You're absolutely right, Donna. I'm so glad that you got to meet Tony and Denise, because their story is very compelling, and I'm sure it's touching a lot of hearts, and we are so grateful you called in to share that.
Thank you very much, and I wish the best to all of you, and thanks to everyone who has supported all of us down here. To whatever extent we needed it, we know your prayers are with those who are deepest.
Oh, you know it.
In agony and pain, but you know, the spirit here is amazing.
And it's apparent to everybody. Your spirit is so apparent. You have told the world what it means to be a Texan. And it's a generous, hardworking, tenacious spirit. And honestly, you probably don't see that in Texas, but the world loves Texas and admires you guys for how you have fought through this devastating battle.
My daughter did a study abroad sometime back, and they loved her.
I love Texas. I've always loved Texas, but I was riveted by watching the examples of your courage and your stick-to-itiveness. So God bless you, Donna, and give our best to those good people in Houston, okay? And good luck.
My fellow Texans are amazing. Yeah. They are amazing.
You're a big state with a big heart. God bless you, Donna.
Thank you for your time, Denise and Tony.
Thank you. And know that the Norbertine sisters were praying for all of the people in Texas and Florida and everywhere. So they particularly were on their knees praying for you.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you so much. And y'all have a blessed day.
You too, Donna.
God bless you.
Hey, I want to take just a little moment to kind of go in a different direction in terms of being stewards of our faith. If we are really going to be good stewards of our faith, we need to stay on top of what's going on in our church. I mean, our church is a universe. And in our world, I mean, we just spoke with Donna, who's been battling the ravages of Harvey there in Houston. And it's important to stay informed with qualified information. Don't let the secular world tell you what's going on in our church. Go to the source. The National Catholic Register is undoubtedly the most trusted Catholic news source, and it offers a comprehensive view of the world through our distinctly Catholic lens. So go to ncregister.com, and you'll find all kinds of interesting and relevant topical stories on their front page. Plus, you can also tune into Register Radio later today at 7 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. And Jeanette DeMillo and Matthew Bunsen, who are Register editors, will discuss some of the prominent current events of the day. Today they are talking about the beatification of Father Stanley Rother. So keep that's happening down there in Oklahoma. I think it's already happened. So blessed Father Stanley Rother. So keep the National Catholic Register on your radar, ncregister.com. Hey, so just in closing, I have to say we eliminated our Chatting with Catholics segment because we wanted to keep the conversation going so much. Our listeners have been enjoying it. How do these sisters support themselves financially?
They do a lot of different things. They have a garden that they grow just about everything that they can eat, so they don't have to go shopping.
Self-sustaining.
Self-sustaining.
Yeah. And there's about 40 sisters there living
44.
There. Yeah, which 44. Is amazing considering they were only founded in 1997.
Right, and it's amazing in the fact that they don't go out and seek new vocations. They don't have a Facebook page. They don't have, you know, they don't have any of that you would get the word out. So it definitely has to be divine in order for the people to find these places or this place. So they haven't been able to sell their cheese yet. They haven't gotten the permits yet. That's a
health department.
That's a health department issue, money issue. So they
hoops
are
to jump through. But you said that they're selling dogs. Now they're raising dogs. They sell Christmas wreaths. They have a beautiful gift shop online. So I'm going to refer you again to NorbertineSisters.org. And I also want to just do a little shout out because we're having a big fundraiser in LA for them next Sunday. And if you want to know more about that, you can go to Norbert-LA.com and you'll find out all about our event. That happens to also, it's October 1st, and it's also the feast day of Saint Therese of Lisieux, to whom they are very, very devoted. I mean, what sister wouldn't have a sort of intimate understanding of St. Therese of Lisieux after living in a cloister? But we're honoring her, and we have some wonderful speakers. Marge Fenlon is coming. Also, the Archbishop of the Military Services, Archbishop Broglio, who is a friend of the Norbertine Sisters. He will also be speaking. So I think there's some more seats available. So if you want to know how you can go to that and you live in the greater L.A. area, go to norbert-la.com and find out about that brunch that's happening next Sunday. Now, you are going to visit your daughters tomorrow. Do you visit them one at a time, or do they all three come out and you have like a little group hug through the grid?
A group hug through the grid. We do meet with all three of them at the same time. They feel like that's more family reunion style, right?
So we more energy.
So all of us crowd into the Bethany house for the visit, and we get to visit with all three of them. So it makes it feel like, you know, a nice family.
Is there any news you want to share with them, or anything you want to hear from them in particular as a mother or a father? You're thinking, I really can't wait to ask them about this.
To me, we talk. We get to visit once a quarter. But what you see is what's on their face.
Ah.
And you can feel the presence. Really, you can feel the presence of Christ in each and every one of them. Mm-hmm. You can see it. You can feel it. Just holding their hand gives you a warm feeling.
Have you noticed as parents any kind of physical changes in them? Do they look older? Do they look younger? Have they lost weight? Have they gained weight? I mean, is their physical appearance changed at all?
A mom always looks on that and looks at that and puts that on the radar. They look, like Tony says, they just glow. So they look very healthy that way. Mother Mary Augustine is very prudent, and she keeps
the
a finger
superior.
On
her.
Yes, the Mother Superior. She keeps a very close watch on them. So if they're losing too much, she, you know, readjusts. They are vegetarian, or they don't eat meat. That's that's an offering for that, a suffering for that.
And then during Lent, they don't even have dairy.
Right, right. So it's very strict, but Mother isn't one to make it just so rigid.
I have been enjoying this conversation so much that the time has slipped away and Jimmy G is bugging me here. So I'm going to have to say goodbye, friends. Go to our Facebook page. Thank you to Denise and Tony O'Borny. Your story is beautiful. Tune in again next week. Until then, you know you can call me Catholic. Bye-bye, folks.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.